Hello, welcome to another Biology on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stouter. Beautiful Dania Beach. Some clouds are rolling in, so you might hear a little thunder later on. I may have to go back to my car. Let's talk about cellular reproduction today. Reproduction is a property of life, as you remember from our previous talk. It's going to be a property of life. If things do not reproduce, then they cannot live. But we're not necessarily talking about the reproduction of the individual to have more kids, for instance. What we're talking more about is the continuity of life depending on reproduction. And this would be meiosis and mitosis. These are two processes that occur inside of the body that cause reproduction of the cells. Now, meiosis is going to be the process of reproducing cells that make the future generations. In the female, that would be considered the egg. In the male, that would be the sperm. Now, mitosis is going to be concerned with the process of reproduction of body cells. So, if you get a cut, you want to heal that cut. The best way to do that is by having mitosis produce more cells to heal that area. All cells go through a lifetime called the cell cycle. And the cell cycle will result in more cells at the end of it. If we look at the overview of the division mechanisms involved in trying to get two cells from one cell, or try to get some sex cells, the nucleus of the cell must divide to reproduce the cell. So the nucleus is where the genetic material is. So we need to reproduce that so that we can then, of course, have a future generation cell. So mitosis and meiosis are processes that divide the nuclear material. So mitosis divides the body cells, which would be called somatic cells. Soma means body. And also divides the nuclear material. So that's going to be the nuclear material of the body cells. The definition of that is going to be mitosis. If we want to divide the nuclear material of the sex cells, then we would use the process of meiosis. Of course, the sex cells are usually scantily clad women on front of magazines, and that's sex cells. No, what sex cells are is sperm and egg. Now, DNA uncoils, and when it uncoils, we call it chromatin. Chromatin is compacted DNA. So chromatin is composed of DNA wound around a protein called a histone. Chromatin winds tightly into a chromosome. So a chromosome means colored body. As we mentioned, som means body, and chromo means colored, so it's a colored body. So picture this now. We have a coiled DNA, and it's going to be coiling around, making a chromosome. If we were to uncoil the chromosome, then we would call that chromatin. If we uncoil the chromatin from the protein that it's wrapped around, now we're going to call that just DNA. So raw DNA is going to start to coil around proteins, and then you get, right, chromatin. And then if you condense chromatin enough, or coil it tightly, or wind it tightly, then you're going to get a chromosome. So a chromosome is looks like a person without a head. All it has is just arms and his legs. The center of the chromosome is called the centromere. So we have the center portion of the chromosome where, I guess you would say, the belly button would be. That's going to be considered the centromere. So that's going to be the center of the chromosome. This is where the division is really going to take place when we start to separate these two. The chromosome number doesn't relate with status in society, however. We know that, for instance, that gorillas have more pairs of chromosomes than we do, but of course, we would say we're more advanced than gorillas. So basically, we just look at the concept of a chromosome uncoiling into chromatin, and that chromatin, of course, becomes DNA as it uncoils. So there's a phenomena called a karyotype, and this is going to be a picture of all chromosomes. And you're probably familiar with the idea behind this. If anybody ever does a DNA match or any of these things, they're going to be taking this further. The karyotype is going to be an actual picture of the chromosomes. That would be, of course, the condensed DNA. So a picture of your chromosomes at metaphase is going to be the karyotypes. Now metaphase is going to be like the middle of cell division. So why do we take it at the middle of cell division? Because this is where they're easier to see, because when chromosomes are in, or when the cell goes through mitosis, it's going to be at metaphase where the chromosomes are going to be meeting in the middle. So because they meet in the middle, it's easier to see them, so therefore you'd want to take a picture of them when they're in this metaphase. We'll learn more about metaphase later when we talk about mitosis. But just remember the karyotypes, or the pictures we take of chromosomes, is going to be taken at the phase called metaphase. So this could answer questions about chromosomal abnormalities like Down syndrome. Down syndrome is called trisomy 21. Now you know what a som is. That, of course, is a body. So if you have trisomy, you have three bodies there instead of two. So in this case, we have an error of meiosis. This is going to occur then usually in the egg. And this then would have three chromosomes at the 21st chromosome area. We have a total of 23 chromosomal pairs. So if at the 21st area we have three and not just a pair, then of course that's called Down syndrome or trisomy 21. You can culture the chromosomes in vitro, which means in glass. And the opposite term for something that's cultured inside the body would be in vivo. So in vivo means in life or in the body, and in vitro literally means in glass. So if we lay out all of our chromosomes, we see we have 23 pairs. We start with the biggest, which would be number one, then we start to go down to the smallest until we get to the X and Y. The X and Y, X is bigger than 22, 23, 24, or is bigger than 22, 21, 20, 19. It's big, but we put it at the end because those are the sex cells. Those aren't the sex cells, those are the sex chromosomes. And the X is big, but the Y happens to be fairly small. So it's probably one of the smallest of the chromosomes. But basically we do it from the size of the chromosomes. So as we gradate down, they get smaller and smaller and smaller, the number increases. So number one would be the biggest chromosome. Number 22 would be the smallest, save for what's happening with the X and the Y. Now genes are going to have genetic information at a certain spot on the chromosome. So this is called a gene locus, or the location of a gene. So the gene locus is going to be an area of the chromosome where you're going to have this certain genetic material. Like let's say the certain part, let's say up at the, you know, if you picture it like a man without a head, let's say it's the right hand, could be like eye color. So the right hand could be eye color. The left hand would also be eye color. The right hand would be like blue eyes. The left hand would be like dark eyes. So you could have that as a locus on your chromosomes. So an allele is going to be an alternative form of a gene. Now an alternative form of a gene is going to be what we just described. Your right hand is blue eyes. Your left hand is brown eyes. These are alternative forms of a gene at the different kinds of gene locus. Now, a homologous chromosome will be a pair of chromosomes that contain genes for the same trait, one from Ma and one from Pa. So this alternative form of a gene, the right hand came from Ma, the left hand came from Pa, for instance. So the right hand, the blue eyes, is still going to be an allele because the left hand is an alternative form of that, right? And also, homologous means they're going to be very similar. So dad gave you the blue eyes on your right chromosome, right portion of your right hand, and mom gave you the left hand, which is going to be your brown eyes. So that would be an alternative form of a gene. The right hand would be considered a gene locus. The homologous chromosome would be considered both your hands, basically. So you got one trait from Ma and one from Pa. We have 46 chromosomes that are like volumes of two sets of books. So picture a volume of two sets of books. Chromosomes 1 through 22 are called autosomes. The sex chromosomes are number 23, and they're called the sex chromosomes. So 1 through 22 are called autosomes. They are paired, and both pairs have the same length and the same shape. The pairs of chromosomes carrying the same hereditary information for the same trait are going to be there. Your father gave you one set, and your mother gave you the other set. But hers is an alternative edition of your father's. Once again, if your right hand is blue eyes, and your left hand is brown, those are alternative editions of the same book, but they're still going to be bringing in different genetic information. One from dad, one from mom. Ma's set covers the same topics, but are slightly different for many of the instructions. Like, the right hand would instruct for blue eyes, the left hand would instruct for brown eyes or dark eyes. Autosomes are 22 pairs of chromosomes that are not the sex chromosomes. Autosomes are the same in both sexes. The sex chromosomes are the 23rd pair. The sex chromosomes come in two varieties, X and Y. The female will have two X's. The male will have an X and a Y. So both sexes have a what chromosome? They have X. So the X chromosome has more than 2,300 genes on it. Most of the X chromosomes are non-sexual traits, however. Blood clottings here, for instance. So even though it's considered the quote-unquote sex chromosome, X has a lot more genetic information than it needs just to make the individual a female. The Y chromosome has fewer than 24 genes. So if you ask who has more genetic information, you have to say that the female does, because she has two X's. She has a lot more genes, because the male has one Y, which only has 24 genes. So one of the 24 genes that is on the Y chromosome is called the master gene. And the master gene is going to be the gene that determines whether or not a male will be produced. So we all start off as females. So for the first few weeks of our life in the womb, we are all females. No matter who we turned out to be, we were females to start. The master gene determines if a person will become a male, and if it's not present, then the person becomes a female. So it's like you're on the road to becoming a female. If the switch doesn't get pulled, you continue on that road and you become a female. So, who determines the sex of a child? The mother or the father? And the answer to that then, of course, would be the father, because the father is going to have either the X and the Y. So that's going to be who's going to be determining the sex of the child is going to be the father. Because the mother can only contribute an X or a Y. Sorry, an X or an X. Whereas the father can contribute an X or a Y. Now when we look at the cell cycle, we see that the cell cycle is going to be something that all cells are going to be going through. Once a cell is produced through the process of mitosis, it's going to go through the cell cycle. So if we look at the diagram, we see that we have two cells that start the process. One, we're just going to look at one cell though. We're going to watch the one cell go into the first part of interphase. Interphase has three phases to it. It has G1, it has S, and it has G2. G1 is the first growth phase. This is where the cellular contents, excluding the chromosomes, are starting to become duplicated. G1 is analogous to infancy. In an infant, they have tremendous amounts of mitotic growth. There's lots and lots of things happening in the infant for them to grow. Then the cell moves into the second phase of interphase, called S. In the S phase, it's where each of the 46 chromosomes is duplicated by the cell. The S stands for synthesis. Synthesis means to create. So we're going to be creating the reproduction of 46 chromosomes. So they're going to be duplicated. Then the cell goes into G2. And G2 is called the second growth phase. The cells double check the duplicated chromosomes for errors, making any needed repairs. Then you're ready to go from G2 into mitosis. And mitosis then is going to be where we divvy up the genetic material, sort of like shuffling the genetic material into the two cells, so that each cell will have exactly the same number of chromosomes. So when we look at the process, we see that we have the chromosomes, going to be a single long DNA molecule packed with protein in a compact shape. Cell cycle is going to be G1, S, G2. All three are called interphase. Mitosis is not part of interphase. Interphase is only G1, S, and G2. And the average lifespan is going to be about 50 divisions. So we're going to see one cell go through the cell cycle about 50 times. So when we do get from interphase and end interphase, we go into mitosis. Mitosis is going to be where we'll find prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase. These four phases are going to be responsible for creating our new cell by giving the new cell its new genetic information, its new chromosomes. So prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase, all four phases of mitosis. Not part of interphase, but all phases of mitosis. In prophase, we see the nucleus breaks down. Why? Because now we're going to be shuffling the genetic material, and that's where the genetic material is found, is in the nucleus. So we're going to break the nucleus down. The DNA will then condense into chromosomes. Then we got metaphase. Metaphase is where the chromosomes meet in the middle. So they're going to migrate to the middle of the cell. In anaphase, they're going to start to separate. Remember when we said the middle of the chromosome was called the centromere? This is where they're going to be separating. They're going to be pulled on by spindles in the cell. So chromosomes separate and move to the opposite sides of the cell. And remember when we talked about the cell, we said that there was organelles called centrioles that were going to assist in division. That's what they do. They go to either side of the cell, and then with their spindles, they attach to the centromere, and then the chromosomes start to separate. Once they start to separate enough, you get an infolding of the nuclear material on the top and bottom. We call it the cleavage furrow. The cleavage furrow forms in telophase. Telophase is where it starts to look like there's two cells, but they're still attached by just a little bit of cytoplasm. Then the cytoplasm pinches away totally. Now you're out of metaphase into the next phase called cytokinesis. And in cytokinesis, you're going to be seeing that we're going to have a total pinching of the cytoplasm, so now you have two cells. Cyto means cell, kinesis means movement. So now you have two cells that move away from each other. Both of these cells then will go into the cell cycle. Two human cells are created in cytokinesis with 46 chromosomes each. Note that cytokinesis is not part of mitosis. The end of mitosis is called what? Telophase. Very good. Telophase is the end of mitosis. But cytokinesis is not part of mitosis. Nor is interphase a part of mitosis. So cytokinesis is at the end of mitosis. At the end of mitosis is cytokinesis, but the end of mitosis is not cytokinesis. The end of mitosis is what? Telophase. But as soon as mitosis ends, then cytokinesis occurs. In animals, two cells are formed that float off to become new cells. In plants, two cells are formed that remain next to each other. A growth plate is formed that separates the two cells. That's the difference between plants and animals. The animal cells tend to be a little bit more dynamic, whereas the plant cells have to stay next to each other. All cells in your body will divide except for three. Nerve cells do not, except for a few exceptions. Skeletal muscle does not. And mature red blood cells do not. Immature red blood cells do, but mature red blood cells do not. One of the reasons why mature red blood cells do not divide is because they don't have a nucleus. They don't have a nucleus so that they can carry more oxygen. So those are going to be the three cells that do not divide. For a while, we have to think of the concept of thinking about what a cell is. Since all cells start from one cell, and then they go through the process of mitosis, so now you have two cells. And then those two cells go through mitosis again, now you have four cells. You can see how you can increase the levels of these cells. So theoretically, every cell in your body, except those three that we just noted, is going to be able to be cloned. We could take the genetic information from your earlobe, for instance, take that cell that has all the information in it, has all the 46 chromosomes, and use that cell to create a new you, because that's all your genetic information. They took this theory to a sheep. They called the sheep Dolly, because they took the donor cells from her mammary glands, and of course a famous woman that has pretty prominent mammary glands is of course Dolly Parton. So that's why they named her Dolly. So they took her udder, or her mammary gland cells, and what they did was is that they took these cells and they took a donor egg, so this was a totally different sheep, and they put her genetic information inside of the new egg. So now you have a totally new egg. It's not Dolly's egg, it's just Dolly's genetic material, but it's another donor's egg. So you take that genetic material, they took out the donor egg's genetic material, they put in Dolly's nucleus, and then they put it through an electrical shock, and then it started to go through fertilization. As it went through fertilization, or after it was fertilized through the electrical shock, then the cells started to divide, going through mitosis. And as they went through mitosis, then they put that embryo that was starting to grow into another sheep. So you have the egg being donated by another sheep, you have the genetic material being donated by Dolly, and then you have a surrogate mother whose genetics doesn't have anything to do with anything. She's basically just a surrogate mother. She's going to allow it to grow into her, and then she had the child, and the child, of course, was called Dolly. So Dolly the sheep, then, is going to be the first example, really, of this concept of cloning. And what have we done? We've done exactly what we just said. We took, for instance, the genetic material from our earlobe, took one cell, took out the genetic information, found another individual to give us an egg. We take out their genetic information, put in ours, and then zap it with some electrical impulses that causes cell division to occur. And this then will cause then a new, totally new sheep. That's the concept behind this cloning concept. Can it happen in humans? Certainly. Is it a good idea? Probably not. Now, cancer is mitosis gone wrong. So if we look at the process of the growth of the cell cycle, the last part of that is really where cancer is going to be occurring. And that's going to be in a characteristic lack of contact inhibition. The normal cells respect each other's place. Their growth is inhibited when they come in contact with each other, but in cancer cells, they intrude on each other, growing over them, causing a tumor to form. They're uncontrolled and they're invasive because their mitosis has gone wrong. They are continually going through the process real, real fast, typically. And that's why a tumor will form. And then that's why, of course, when it forms, it starts to cause the organ that it's housed in to malfunction. So oncogenes are many cancers that arise through mutations. A mutated gene is called an oncogene. So you can get cancer through mutations. And we've seen this in like a skin cancer, stuff like that, where the sun causes the cells to mutate. A benign situation is where we have no cancer. A malignant situation is where we do have a cancerous tumor. So benign means that it's not going to be as invasive, and it's not going to be as big of a problem. It still can be a growth. Soft, movable growth, for instance, is usually benign, like a lipoma. A lipoma is just a fatty tumor, but it's not a cancerous tumor. Malignant is going to be stony hard, usually. It's going to pucker the skin because it sends out little attachments, adhesions. like in breast cancer, for instance, they'll do a breast exam, and they'll have the individual push their hands together to tighten the muscles beneath. If there's cancer, it'll pucker the skin. And that's characteristic of that. There is a possibility for the cancer not to stay in one place, but to move by blood or by the lymphatic system to another spot. And this is called metastasis. And metastasis then would be the movement or the spread of cancer by blood to another area. So we know, for instance, if a person has breast cancer, sometimes that breast cancer can go to the brain. So the primary cancer was the breast. The brain cancer was then the metastasis. So cancer cells are virtually immortal. When they go through the cell cycle, they don't go through 50 times, they go through forever. If we could learn about this, how they do become immortal, maybe one day, we could become immortal. Now, angiogenesis is a theory of long-term cancer treatment, not cure, but treatment, where we can get at the angio, which is the blood vessel. So if we can get at the blood vessel that is giving the nutrients to the cancer, and decrease that, then the cancer will not be able to grow as fast, so we can keep it in check. So that's the theory of angiogenesis. My wife came up with this website which put together a lot of this information dedicated to cancer research and this particular concept of angiogenesis. So I encourage you to visit the website that she created, www.cancerprotocol.com. Now, some prevention and causes of cancer is going to be environment. It's going to be one cause. Carcinogens, as we said, the hereditary components, diet possibly, even viruses could cause cancer. So with environment, it would be good to decrease our exposure at home and at work of toxic substances or carcinogens. Some carcinogens are, of course, cigarette smoking, moderate to excessive UV exposure. Mothballs is a chemical that could be considered a carcinogen. Even to modify your risk as far as heredity is concerned is a good idea. If you know, for instance, you have breast cancer in your family, you may want to take steps, dietary steps or whatever other kind of steps, to modify your risk. You may not want to smoke, for instance. If there's a dietary thing that we could do, they always say vegetables. Vegetables and fruit are very, very important. They contain lots of minerals and vitamins that we need to stave off cancer. Whole foods, and also fiber, basically getting back to a more natural diet. And if we're thinking about viruses causing cancer, of course, increasing our immunity would help. How do we do that? Laughter and crying, expressing emotions. It's very important for our immunity or our immune system health. Also a positive mental attitude. See the glass is half full, not half empty. And exercise is important. Fresh air and sunlight is important. Remember we said sunlight's okay as long as it's light and it's not going to be extreme. You know, an hour and a half a day is good for you. And vitamins, of course, we want to take our vitamins, our multivitamins. Also multi-minerals. Make sure it contains nice antioxidants such as vitamin C, vitamin E, selenium. And love and faith is an important thing for improved immunity. And it's been shown that people that have pets tend to live longer. Now, meiosis is going to be a division of the sex cells. We said the sex cells of sperm and egg are going to be dividing. Now, when fertilization occurs, that's when the gametes, the eggs and the sperm, fuse. They produce a single cell called a zygote. The zygote, then, is a diploid. It contains 46 chromosomes. Previous to that, it was a haploid cell. So an egg and a sperm are called haploid because they're half of 46. They contain 23 chromosomes. So the end product of meiosis is four gametes, an egg or sperm, which are haploid or contain 23 chromosomes each. Now it makes sense, doesn't it, that a sperm would only contain 23 chromosomes and an egg would only contain 23 chromosomes, because when the egg and sperm come together, they're going to have 46. So the 23 is coming from Ma, the 23 is coming from Dad, and as we just discussed, we're going to be getting these alternative forms of the gene, the alleles, from our mother and father. So it's a perfect setup. So with mitosis, we get two cells at the end of the process. These two cells are going to be diploid. So remember that diploid is going to be 46 chromosomes. Whereas meiosis gives us four cells. We call this then haploid. So that's going to be 23 cells. Just remember, half of 46 is 23. So meiosis creates sex or germ cells. They're called the egg and the sperm. And mitosis creates body or somatic cells. Meiosis is mitosis done twice. So you go through the process of prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase for mitosis, but for meiosis, you go through again. So it would be prophase 2, metaphase 2, anaphase 2, telophase 2. And during the process of meiosis, you want to make a variance in your genetic material. You know, we don't let close relatives marry each other because their genetics is too close. With that being the case, you could have a weaker individual being born. The more variety there is in the gene pool, the better. So genes are shuffled to create a variety in the gene pool naturally during the process of meiosis. Variety makes the species stronger, makes less disease. You see this in breeding, you know, like dogs, for instance. The real purebreds sometimes are not as hardy as the mutts, the combinations. So meiosis only has genetic crossover. Mitosis does not. We can't shuffle our genes if we're reproducing our own cells, because you want your skin to be exactly like your skin previous. You don't want it to keep changing. You don't want your nose to turn into, you know, an ear. So because of that, you don't have genetic crossover in mitosis, but you do in meiosis, because we want to change our genes around. We want our future generations to be different than us. So meiosis only has genetic crossover, and it occurs in prophase 1. Each potential lineup gives different gene combinations in the final gamete called genetic recombination. Genetic recombination is the process by which a strand of DNA is broken and then joined into a different DNA molecule. This occurs during meiosis in genetic crossover. So let's talk about what genetic crossover would be like. Once again, the analogy of a human being a chromosome. So if you picture a person without a head, their two arms and two legs, that would be like our chromosomal pair. If we cross our arms and cross our legs, that would be considered genetic crossover because we're crossing over the genetic material. Now, picture that you're crossing over your right arm and your right arm, and on your right arm, your left hand would be going on it, whereas your right hand would go on your left arm. So you're changing hands is what you're doing. You're shifting your genetic material. That's sort of the idea about what goes on with genetic crossover. Now, the sperm and the egg is going to be about 5 million sperm produced during each ejaculation of the male. Meiosis is done millions of times in the testicle, whereas the female only produces 4 eggs. But you go, wait a minute, I thought that you only got one egg a month. That's true. Oogenesis, which is the process of creating these 4 eggs, does only create one egg that lasts because the other 3 are discarded. This is called chromosomal shedding. So this is another way to get variety in the gene pool as well. So the female produces 4 eggs, so we'll call them egg A, B, C, and D. But egg D is the only one that survives. Suppose we had a disease such as Down syndrome in egg A, and it gets chromosomally shed. The disease will not manifest. So you have a 1 in 4 chance of the woman carrying on a genetic problem. So, and that's pretty good odds. So to assist in the gene pool, we have two things that occur in meiosis. One is this genetic crossover, and two is the chromosomal shedding. So you want to consider the comparison between mitosis and meiosis. Put those in there, but then also make sure that you know the similarities between the two. So I hope that you enjoyed that. This is Dr. Leo Stauder for Biology on the Beach, and we'll talk to you again. Bye now.